welcome back to Sofa Science on a frigging sofa. Like, you're not going to believe this. I'm at VidCon right now, and in one of the hospitality suites, they've got a sofa filming studio.
They knew you were coming.
They knew that I've got a collab series based around a sofa. So, first, I'm joined by Dr. Johansson.
Hello. I'm so happy to be on your sofa, but we call them couches in
America. Yeah, lots of people have been saying, oh, can I be on your couch thing? Which is quite cool. First questions, all first questions go. Who are you?
I am a YouTuber. I make a channel called It's Okay to Be Smart. And I'm also a scientist. Mm-hmm. But I don't do science anymore like you do. I'm a science communicator, a science writer, and a science teacher, I hope.
One of my favorite things to do on this channel is to get you to look at the world you know in a different way. To take something you thought was ordinary and show you why it's extraordinary. Today, I'm in Alaska, and you're never gonna look at beavers the same way again.
So let's start with that then. You are a doctor, you're Dr. Johansson, PhD.
Both of them?
Yeah, Dr. Johansson, PhD. Because you just go by Joe. You don't use the whole Dr. Joe thing as in your branding.
It's true. I mean, I don't like to... You know, expertise is one thing, but I don't want people to just listen to me or in my videos or what I'm saying just because they think I'm speaking from on high. That mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, I did spend like 6.5 years getting it,
right?
So I like to put it in there every once in a while.
Yeah. And you started off, was it biochem, biomed that you started off doing?
Yeah, I started off in biochemistry and then molecular genetics and a lot of different kinds of molecular biology.
So then how did you get started doing YouTube?
Really accidentally. It still kind of blows my mind that I do this for a living these days. So in grad school, science communication was started to get really important to me from telling people about my own research in my own life, trying to do community work in Austin on a local level. Then I started writing about it online because I felt like young people were interested, but there was nobody really writing about science in a way that they would find entertaining or cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started to translate kind of science journalism and traditional science communication into language and style that I thought would really resonate with young people and younger people. The millennials.
The kids. Gotta get down with the kids.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
And my website just really took off. I think I just kind of hit a nerve. And at the end of grad school, it's time to start making decisions about what I was going to do. And I guess just out of a little bit of mix of luck and preparation, I got an email from PBS to just try to convert that, what I was doing, into a video series.
So what you were doing before then was a written form of science communication?
It was mostly written, but I've kind of always thought of in multimedia, in a multimedia way of storytelling. I would use a lot of, you know, making little mini GIF animations and doing a lot of visual and text combination storytelling,
mm-hmm.
Using a lot of imagery to do this, and it seemed to be like a really natural transition into doing video then.
And PBS, first off, who are PBS?
PBS is public broadcasting. That's where like Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street came from. It's where a lot of us kids in America grew up learning about stuff on TV, and now they're doing it on YouTube.
Yeah, I always describe it as the BBC of America, but not quite as a big deal. Not quite so much of a big deal.
Not quite as, like, shiny.
Yeah. But it's still, it's that idea of, it's government-funded, right? Or is it donation-funded as well?
It's both, yeah. So it's really cool. People get to support it themselves by being members and donating, but there also is some federal funding most of the time, as long as they don't take it away.
We're not moving into politics. I refuse to talk about politics.
Me too.
Good. And so they sent you an email, and this was before you'd done any on-camera presenting style work.
Exactly. I had sort of like a minor ability to use a camera, but never had made a video. Never had really done. I'd been using video in teaching, mm-hmm. actually, so I was really aware of YouTube.
Because it's an interesting thing. In grad school in the US, you do an awful lot more teaching than grad school in the UK.
Yeah, they don't get free labor out of you guys.
Well, firstly, we're paid if we do teaching, but it's our choice if we do teaching. So sometimes you'll do it for extra money, but it's not like the expectation that you will teach an entire course. That's what the fellows and the professors do.
That would be nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's a way for that was a way for us to support our way through grad school. And so when I was doing it, when I was in front of these undergraduates, you know, I got 20-year-olds and trying to make science interesting to them in our discussion sections where we could have like a little more free form time. I was using YouTube a lot, and it was in the back of my head. And if I hadn't had the opportunity from PBS, like a month later, I'm pretty sure I would have started my own YouTube channel.
Yeah.
It was right there. And they just gave me a really great opportunity to kind of get some support and make what I could imagine versus, you know, maybe what I only would have had the ability to do at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I got to.
How did you find that transition then from not being a public face to being a public face? Because that's often quite an intimidating step for people.
It was, you know, it wasn't that hard for me. I guess I just realized that I really had always enjoyed being up in front of people. And
are you secretly a wannabe actor?
Wannabe actor? What do you mean? I'm outgoing and I enjoy the teaching process. And that's what I've always kind of felt like when mm-hmm. I'm on the other side of the camera, is that it didn't feel that different from me from being in front of, you know, 30 people in a classroom communicating the same way. I'm acting the same way. I'm trying to connect in that same way.
Making the same stupid puns.
Exactly. Those have been that did not start on YouTube. That goes way back. So that wasn't that big of a transition for me. You know, it's weird to when you start seeing those numbers and thinking about what they mean when they hit, you know, thousands and then tens of thousands, and you're just. That does get a little strange,
mm-hmm.
but I think a few people had known about my science communication work from doing the old stuff that I was kind of used to, you know, a few people knowing who I am.
Yeah.
Although, I do remember the day I had to tell my advisor that I was doing YouTube videos and science communication.
Yes.
He's a little old school.
Okay.
And it wasn't the easiest conversation. Like, he wasn't mad. I just don't think he had any idea that scientists would want to maybe do this for a living.
That's so... Because your advisor is your supervisor, your tutor, your boss, essentially, for the time that you're doing your PhD. So he wasn't like, you should be spending all of your time doing your PhD.
He did actually kind of push that. He's like, if you're going to do this, it's on the side. Don't let it get in the way of the work.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's important. Kind of hinting that maybe you're making a mistake.
Yeah.
But I have never doubted it. And I don't. And I feel really lucky that I was able to be confident in that. Because I don't know if a lot of people, if they heard that, I think it might have given them second thoughts and to not make that jump. But something, you know, I know it sounds like kind of mystical and I don't, you know, and fate kind of talk, but I did kind of feel like it was some kind of calling. It was so enjoyable and so rewarding for me
mm-hmm.
that I somehow knew that I knew better than he did.
Yes.
That this was going to be worthwhile and fun and necessary and that I could do it.
Mm-hmm. So PBS emails. And what does that look like in terms of, is it just you making your own videos and they're funding you for them? Do they provide you with a team and support?
So PBS Digital Studios, who make, you know, they make a lot of YouTube shows now.
Now they do.
Now they do. And I was, I think, the second one that they ever kind of put together, along with Idea Channel that Mike mm-hmm. Rugnetta does. And there weren't a lot of rules and expectations then. At the very beginning, you know, I wanted to kind of try a lot of things and figure out what felt right. You know, if it was going to be me on camera, if it was going to be like animated, what kind of stories we were going to do. And so it started out with me and just one guy that I met in Austin kind of helping me on the technical stuff with camera and lighting and making it look good. Because I did want it to look good from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then PBS said, yeah, well, you know, they give us some financial support and kind of do a little, like, test run, experimentation. People started catching on. They liked what we were doing. But then I still had something more in mind about what, like, my dream show.
Yeah.
You know, there's what you picture and then there's what you're doing.
Yes. I constantly think that I'm a better YouTuber than my YouTube channel has evidence to provide. Because I'm like, but in my head, I've got these amazing videos. It's just that
I've never made them yet.
I know. I love that chase. And that I still do that. I'm still kind of like always imagining one step ahead of where I think we are, which is a great creative driver. It keeps you going. Mm-hmm. But there at the beginning, after making a few videos, that summer, I started this right after grad school. Like, okay. I defended, and then we started making videos right then. So, you know, not as if I wasn't busy enough. Mm-hmm. That summer, I had a really great opportunity to do a science journalism fellowship.
Oh, that's handy.
So, AAAS, who they published the journal Science.
Yes, American Advancement for the...
American Association for the Advancement of Science. Way too many A's in one acronym there. Mm-hmm. But they have a great fellowship program for science journalism that takes scientists who want to do this, and they put them in real science journalism jobs. So I was really lucky there to get to work at Wired Magazine for a summer.
Oh, cool.
So like some really hardcore, on the job training.
Yes.
Taking that science experience and then learning how to do some of the more journalism and mass communication side.
And what were the key points that you learned that were different between science and science journalism from working with Wired?
It's about really being sensitive to your audience and what's important, and becoming a good communicator, a better writer, but also a good journalist. And we don't really use that word a lot, I think, when we're talking about what we do on YouTube with science. But when we're researching, and if we're interviewing people and we're putting these stories together, I still use a lot of the same processes and a lot of the same work and a lot of the same rules and tricks that I did when I was writing, an article.
Mm-hmm.
The style's different, and we pick different things out, but that training really taught me how to pick out the right things for a science story.
How do you pick a science story? Because you're making a video a week now, is that right?
Pretty much a video every week. And
so that's a lot of stories, not only just in terms of researching and filming and editing, but just finding that number of stories must be tough.
It's not tough to find them. It's tough to narrow them down and actually pick the ones we want. So from the beginning, I decided I wanted to do a science show about all different subjects.
Mm-hmm.
Not just in biology, not just in physics, or there were plenty of physics channels out there too. But
yeah, it's interesting actually. It is a quite physics dominated space. I don't know why.
Well,
because TV is so full of biology.
Exactly. Physicists will tell you that all other sciences are just physics. So,
and they are wrong.
You know what I tell them? Without biology, you wouldn't have physicists.
There we go. Yeah.
Ha. Anyway, so I wanted to do a general science show. And for the challenge for me has been picking out of everything. Then I'm almost overwhelmed with choices. Because I can do a video about space one week, and I can do a video about neuroscience the next week, or math, or biology. So I have stacks of notes and ideas jotted down and saved. So it's
And do you find them from reading the news, from going to talks, or
anything and everything? So everything from a conference, and I'll hear a talk, and that sounds cool, about maybe some new research is coming out, because we've done some stuff that goes along with a paper that comes out and feature is like, that's like a really cool new finding on a bigger topic in biology. So we get to teach a lesson, but then we get to show some really cool, this is like the pivotal moment when we figure
something
out.
And it also gives you a reason to start talking about that bigger topic in biology, because it's topical.
Exactly. And that, so they come from stuff like that. I'm constantly reading about science. Most of what I do during the day when I'm not writing or working on managing the channel and getting the next video out is I'm reading in the evening about science. I keep trying to read more fiction books.
Mm-hmm.
I just keep on going back to my nonfiction and science books. I just love it. It's what I would be reading anyway. And I'm just constantly pulling little bits of that. And I use Evernote, this program, to just sort of tag and save stuff. Every once in a while, I just go back in there and see if there's kind of three or four things that I've been thinking about that click together, there are little dots that I can connect and be like, okay, I think we've got a really cool story here.
So then what are your criteria for selecting them down to which ones make the videos?
We do try to balance the subjects. So me and the guys I work with in Austin, Joe and Andrew, awesome creative team we've gotten to put together. We sit there, we want to cover everything, even though if it was up to me, we might be doing biology all the time because it's the best subject.
It is.
So we pick up, and the criteria, you know, they're first off, it's what's interesting to me.
Yeah.
It is a reflection of my curiosity, and I'm trying to kind of share that, you know, my little journey of why I got excited about it.
Well, people are watching you because you're interested in these things. They're not watching you because, I mean, sometimes they're not watching you because they want to even know about the science. They're watching you because they're like, oh, Joe's interested in this thing. Maybe I'm going to be interested in it too.
I hope so. That's my goal, is to have that excitement come through. And, you know, whatever it made me feel, whether it was like just awe or if it made me feel, you know, think of something funny or just kind of help me understand science in a greater respect, I want to share those experiences. So the criteria is first to be excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do try to pick a lesson in there because it's an educational channel. It's entertaining, but even if it's not being used by a teacher to like check off a box on the curriculum, I want somebody to come out of that having learned something. So I think back and like, what is like the lesson? Is there a topic or a term or a concept that they're getting out of this? And also just to get people more comfortable with science too. But so what about, we're picking these stories out, then we want to build a story around it, because I always use that word. Mm-hmm. Stories.
Does the word story mean to you?
It's got a beginning and a middle and an end. It has some characters. And it makes you feel something.
Do the characters have to be human?
Never.
Okay.
Well, no, they can't, but they don't always have to be.
Yes. Yeah.
And the character can be me. The character can just be, you know, something we draw that you get to follow along. But I think that we humans think in narratives. You guys like that music?
I think they have decided to turn the audio on for the VR station next to us. So at this point, we're going to test how much I've learned about audio editing and hopefully at least remove some of the bass noises now. Yeah, sorry, I really need to learn more about audio editing. Okay, do continue.
Great. Well, so when we, for stories, characters can be a lot of different things, but I do think that humans think in stories. We respond to that. It's like, it's how we've shared information for a long time, and I think that it's an effective way for us to learn about things,
mm-hmm.
whether it was from our parents or our books, movies. That's how we think. So I do try to build stories. So when we sit down and think about a video, we want to see those pieces start to come together. Take that raw science and start building things around it that make it more entertaining.
Mm-hmm. And then just before we move on to talking about the videos themselves, so you started off, you and another tech person in Austin,
mm-hmm.
how did it then grow to become what it is, and you settled on this one format of you with all these animations?
So that was when I had that like, this is what I dream it could be, and I wanted it to be visual, because when you start animating, you just get to do things and show things that you couldn't show otherwise. We can go to a different universe. We can, you know, we can explain something that might take you a long time to say in a more condensed, and we can do a lot of jokes.
Mm-hmm.
We can have more fun that way. So I met a couple guys in Austin after doing this for a few months, and Andrew Matthews and Joe Nicolosi, my editor, animator, and the director, and they just, together, we kind of have just been constantly evolving this vision. They're just amazing filmmakers who are interested in science, and I'm the scientist who tries to inspire their excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And together we make this kind of amazing brain mush.
And are they hired by you or hired by PBS?
They are hired. I found them. You know, we all met in Austin, and then they work through PBS.
Okay. So how do you choose the people you work with?
I want them to be genuinely interested in science and excited about it. To be creative and kind of share that vision of why science is important.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't necessarily have to be scientists. I worked with them because they can do things that I can't do.
Yeah. Do you find it hard delegating to other people?
At the beginning, it was super hard because you know, these are our, like, our YouTube channels are our babies. Yep. Like, they're part of our soul.
Especially when they start off being more of a hobby as well.
Yeah, exactly. And then when I committed that I was going to try to do this for a job, it puts so much more weight on your home. I gotta pay the rent.
Yeah.
So, you know, picking them was difficult, and delegating anything was difficult at the beginning, but it does get easier over time because you build trust and you see how, you know, I get to focus on the things that I love and I'm good at, and all of the stories and things, and together we make a better thing than I ever could by myself.
Mm-hmm. So now let's talk about why, kind of like who your audience are and like why you're doing it in that perspective. So who do you aim to make your videos for?
It's really hard to answer that now. At the beginning, I was aiming for the same people that I was teaching, because that's who I could picture when I started making videos.
Yeah.
And I knew that was the kind of language that I was using. So it's, you know, it's high school and young college, but not necessarily people who want to be scientists.
Because this is the thing, is that at university in the States, you will have people taking subjects that they then go on to drop.
Right, and you just have to check off a few, you know, basic core courses, and so you got to take a couple science classes. So that was fun to teach them, because sometimes they're really interested in ways that science students aren't. But it's also, for people in general, we know, you know, it's important for everyone to understand some part of science, why it's important, and why it's enjoyable, why it's worth supporting, and it does make your life better if you kind of understand how the universe works.
Mm-hmm.
If you stop and you stare up at a cloud, and you're kind of like, wow, that's like, your day's better if you understand how that works.
Yeah, and that's who you were aiming at. You said it's different to who you're aiming at now?
Now, I found as the audience grows and more people find the videos, every time I think I'm aiming at something, I look at like the analytics on YouTube, and the ages go from, you know, 13 and under. I know people watch with young kids all the way up to, you know, people who are 60, 70 years old that are watching these videos and getting something out of them. So I guess we're succeeding, but also like failing to hit like some key demographic.
Yeah, so do you have an idea of kind of who they are? Because your analytics gives you one idea. It tells you the age and the sex of your audience. But do you have an idea of kind of what backgrounds they've come from?
It seems to be a lot of people are interested in science but aren't studying science or aren't going to be scientists. I think a few people, it's helped maybe nudge them to be scientists. But I am more interested, I think, in the... We do a really good job, I think, of making scientists. We'd all like to, I think, change the numbers inside of that, but what scientists look like. But we're not running out of scientists.
Yeah.
And I want to get more people interested in science outside of that. So most of the people who watch our videos are, you know, interested, but not, yeah, you know, not professional.
Yes.
So that's who we continue to try to make stories for, and I think we're doing a pretty good job. But it's just been really fascinating about how broad and diverse the audience is.
Mm-hmm.
Except for one key problem.
Let me guess. Too many men.
Too many men.
Well, I should say not enough women.
Not enough women.
Because we're very happy, exactly, men, that you're watching our video. Whenever we end up talking about the gender split, we're really happy that we've got large male audiences. We just wish we had large female audiences as well.
And, you know, whatever size of a person you are, it's fine. Large, small, it's great. I mean, I'm not going to...
Triangular, hexagonal.
Polygonal people. So yeah, we... And, you know, everybody, we've talked about the percentages behind the channels a lot. And we're, you know, 80% male, 85% male audience, and I want to see that change. We've tried a few things, picking different topics and trying to tell the stories differently. We think a lot about if we got to show a character or animate a person that isn't me, like, who's that going to be? Who are we going to show in pictures? Trying to just change what we're showing people to nudge it in another direction. But, you know, I'm conscious of who I am.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a white guy making YouTube videos, and so there's some reflection of that in the audience, and that's constantly something we want to change. So,
have you found anything that does change the gender split, like with topics or presentation style?
Yeah, the topics, seem to make a big difference. You know, if we're talking about space and robots and some, you know, something tied into a movie or Game of Thrones, men are that's going to be like a 90% male video. Mm-hmm. If I'm doing collaborations with channels that are hosted by women, which I love to do, then that does it. That helps it out a lot.
That's interesting.
If we're in certain subjects, you know, I see stuff like psychology, neuroscience, you know, biology videos do better with the female audience.
Mm-hmm.
And so we pay attention to that all the time.
Yeah, and that kind of reflects what we see in wider society as well.
I think so. And I don't quite trust that there's not a huge population of women who are or would be interested in space, universe, physics. We know many of them. It's about having to try to find them. Like, how do we get YouTube to help us out and reach them?
Because
we don't know. We've been talking a lot at VidCon. There's a lot of conversations going on about this stuff. Are there things about the way that algorithms work that are feeding into this?
I had someone come up to me after a panel and said that there will be people who we register as men in our analytics who are actually women who lied when they signed up to Google, which I had not considered as a possibility before.
Not until this moment have I heard of such a thing.
I know, right?
But that's, I mean...
And this is a guy working for Google who reckons it's on a fairly large scale.
Wow.
Like more than 1 or 2%, like more in the 10% level. I have no idea if this is the case, but when I heard that, I was just like, wait, if that... What? And it just opened my mind to all these other possibilities. Because obviously our analytics are only what people, when they sign up to Google, tell Google.
Right. You know, and analytics are important. But I don't make videos for analytics, right? I don't make videos for data.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to make videos for people. And so we do, you know, we pay attention to comments too, and what's coming through on Twitter and what we see on the Facebook page. So that gives us sometimes different answers about who's watching and what they're thinking. But it's a challenge, and it's on our minds a lot. And I don't know if we know the answer yet about how to change that. But we're going to keep trying new stories and, you know, keep trying to bring new voices onto the channel. You know, who knows? What this might look like in a couple of years. I'm all about bringing as many kinds of voices onto the channel as possible. I've learned a lot about that. Meeting other YouTubers has changed the way I think about this kind of stuff, and I'm glad people are thinking about it. And we'll see what happens. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
And you've been. I was going to say, you've been growing. Your channel has been growing throughout this whole period. Is it organic growth? Has there been, like, spurts where you suddenly get a whole bunch of subscribers from one place? Like, how has that looked from your perspective?
It's been fairly... There's been kind of a steady baseline rate, and that's been pretty cool to watch, that people just keep on coming, that we're making the right thing. But when we collaborate...
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been lucky to meet some and get some collaborations with some bigger YouTube channels. I did a collaboration with Vsauce3 with Jake, and pretty early on. I mean, that was one of probably the first big collaboration I did. That was huge number of people that come in, and it's funny because you never know. You know, if they're just gonna click because it's a collaboration. Hopefully, you keep them happy and they stick around. It seems like a lot of them did. And every time we've done something like that, collaborations are great. Because I always assumed that everybody was watching the same science channels, and they don't. Our audience is just, they don't overlap a lot.
And it's interesting that with this series, is that a lot of people in the comments have been like, oh, it's another science channel for me to learn about.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, how have you not heard about this channel before? It's insane.
I know. Just because we know about all of them.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody else.
Like, it's our job to know all of the science channels as much as possible.
And we've had some videos that really took off and got numbers up pretty quick. Having done science communication and science writing for a while, I've made some good friends and have been lucky enough to get my videos featured here or there by a couple of people who have big audiences. And it's just about helping each other out. And, you know, they genuinely like them, I guess.
Yes.
But... being able to kind of expand that universe even kind of beyond YouTube a little bit to share it has been really great. That's been helping.
And do you actively try to do things to reach a broader audience, say a more female audience or a less scientifically educated audience? Is that something that you think about when you're making your videos and thumbnails and all the metadata?
All those titles and everything we're putting in there. Yeah, we definitely do try to, for the general audience question, everything that we're kind of designing around the videos is to reach them and to, so that if somebody had never heard of the channel before and didn't know what we did, and if they saw it, they would want to click on it having just knowing nothing about us. Make a new friend. Every video we do try to put out there as if it was the first invitation to come and hang out with us.
Okay.
But also making it comfortable for people who have known us for a long time. But that other part about maybe reaching more women, that has been harder to crack. We still haven't seen that nudge. But again, when we do different kinds of stories, so now when we talk about what we're planning for the year and everything, we do take that into account. Like, hey, we've done enough dude stories. Like, we got the comic book stuff taken care of. Like, you know, let's do something around Mother's Day, or you know, I'm about to have our first kid, me and
Yay!
My wife.
We're
having a baby. So, you know,
A
little tiny Joe. I'm going to have a little nerd to show like real world stuff too.
You're going to have twins so you can have a control.
You don't get to just pick twins, unfortunately.
Is that not how biology works?
We're just having one, which I'm fine with. It's going to be a big change. So one's fine. We'll think about two later on. But that's putting a whole different things in my head about you know, doing videos about this experience and what I've learned about pregnancy and how amazing this is, that how a human grows. And I knew about it in like the textbook biology sense, but it is magical in all of the greatest scientific uses of the word.
I love how you gave it magical. I'm like, it's weird and gross and disgusting, and there's a parasite growing inside of you
things.
And changing your psychology and physiology and pushing your organs around.
Ripping your bones apart.
Such a conflict between like the placenta and the embryo. Oh, it's gross. That's going to have surely a huge impact on your YouTubing though. Do you think it's going to change how you think about your career and how much time you spend doing YouTube versus family time?
Yeah, you know, one thing grad school does not teach you is how to take care of yourself and time management. It's at least in the U.S. they're so competitive, and that it makes you work so many hours that you don't balance your life often. Or you just don't learn how to make that a priority.
That's the one thing that grad school has taught me.
Really?
Is how to make my personal life and my health a priority. Because I've pushed it so far that it's impacted on my work. And so now I'm like, I have to value my health above all else. Because otherwise everything else fails.
I wish I would have learned that in grad school too. Yeah, I've always been very driven. And competitive, I think, to succeed, like not competitive against other people. But,
yeah.
And so that's been a constant conflict. So this whole change is I've been trying to prepare for that this year about working differently, making sure there's time, and learning that lesson that you already learned apparently. But people should take care of it. I mean, you feel like people are going to forget about you in a week, and that you're just kind of constantly, you know, getting that next week's video out. And it's important to step back sometimes and just take a look at it and be comfortable and take care of yourself and make sure you're doing things for the right reasons and that you're still enjoying every part of it and not just doing it because you think you have to get something out. Because if you're not enjoying it, then really, why are we doing it?
Yes. And how do you define success on YouTube?
There's a lot of different ways to look at it. And we want people to watch our videos. You know, I want people to subscribe. Those numbers are great, and we pay attention to them. But they're not why I make videos. Success is going to be building a channel, and hopefully more than one channel. A whole movement about getting people excited about the unknown and being genuinely curious, whether it's history or cooking or science or whatever it is that makes them excited, to chase those things. And I want to be able to look back at this in many years and maybe have, you know, a lot of different projects that I'm really proud of, and even beyond video. But on a day-to-day basis, it's me being happy about the work, writing something that I'm really proud of, and then seeing, even if it's one or two magic comments that I pick out underneath the video, just seeing that those personal reactions from people, I really do try to not look at the big picture numbers often, and really I love reading through comments most of the time.
I was gonna say, how do you read the comments and you enjoy the comments? Do you find it weird, like being a person on the internet with a relative degree of fame and celebrity surrounding that?
It has. I haven't had any too bad experiences. You know, there is a trick in your brain that it'll want you to pay attention to some of the most negative stuff, even if it's way in the minority. And I'm pretty aware of that. So, but I do. I've developed like a little bit of a thick skin. I've been on the internet long enough to know to be a little troll resistant. And I mean, as a guy making videos, I don't have to deal with a lot of what other people making videos might have to deal with in comments. So, you know, I don't ever reach the really dark parts of mm-hmm. that. But I do go looking for just to see how people are reacting, and that fuels me to see people say, you know, this is my favorite channel. This video totally changed the way I look at this. I never knew this. I want to go tell somebody about it. I love seeing shares. I love seeing the videos when I'm surprised about seeing them in another place.
Yes.
Because that tells me somebody took the time to go take it and show it mm-hmm. to somebody else. That means a lot more to me than watching like a view counter click up.
And what video are you proudest of?
Wow. What video am I proudest of? I love all of my children equally, but the videos that I got to make in Peru last year, we went down to the Amazon,
yes.
which was incredible. Like it's absolutely as amazing as you're imagining, but with more bugs. That
makes it more incredible.
It was more incredible, and most of them didn't want to hurt us. That was such a challenge because, I mean, I want to make bigger and better things, and you know, the classic natural history programming like Sir David and all of these great things, but
yeah.
to translate that for our audiences and the time that we live in and the way that I look at these things, that was an amazing challenge, and I'm really proud of what we got to do down there because I think we went deep into nature and we made some really cool films in the field. But really made them something that is totally our own.
Yeah.
And that was...
There were YouTube natural history, or It's Okay to Be Smart mm-hmm. natural history, rather than your standard blue chip BBC Planet Earth style
yeah.
thing.
It's one thing that I think that we made that nobody's ever done those kind of videos exactly how we would, and I'm just super proud of them.
They're great videos. They are linked in the eye. That side.
This one.
Yeah. And... This is always a tricky question for people to answer. What thing do you wish that the audience knew that you don't think they know?
I think a lot of people, when they see PBS, they see that we have some amazing people helping us produce these videos. I'm a scientist. I don't think a lot of people know about how I started my channel and why I do it. I'm not a character. I'm goofy, but you know, I'm not an actor. I'm not doing it to make millions of dollars. You know, I am passionate about teaching this stuff, and I'm the biggest fan of science there is in the world, and I want to share that, you know, that we are, just because we get to make things that look great and we've been successful, that it's real, that Dr. Joe is under there. So maybe they'll watch this video and know more about the story.
Yeah, hopefully so. Where can people find you? What's your favorite social media site?
Well, they can probably find me easiest on Twitter. I'm not sure it's my favorite these days,
okay.
But at Dr. Joe Hansen. You can find me there. And you can find me on YouTube.
But what's your favorite then?
I love Instagram.
Do you?
I'm like super bad at selfies and just not really into showing my face all the time in places. I'd much rather show people stuff about what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
If you wouldn't want to follow me around my yard and look at some bugs, I've got the Instagram account for you.
So do you like Instagram? Because if it's because you don't want to show your face, then surely something like Twitter makes more sense because it's less picture-oriented.
But I like to. I want to show people something. I want to. It's like kind of mini adventures.
Okay.
That without having to go through one of our fully produced video to kind of share little moments. I love it because it's just a little photography adventure or a little clip. But something more than like Snapchat that's gonna evaporate into the ether.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loving Instagram. I'll get better at it one of these days.
There we go. Go follow all of those things. Hope you enjoyed this. I hope the sounds of attack from the VR machine to our left wasn't too distracting, and we'll see you for another Sofa Science soon. Bye! I am